at the wonders of Allah. And as I learned the cruel lessons of life, Islam shone through as my guide.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Alhamdulillah Rabbil Alamin. Ar-Rahmanir Rahim. Maliki Yawmiddin. La ilaha illallah Muhammadur Rasulullah. I declare there is no deity worthy of worship other than Allah, and that the Prophet Muhammad is the final messenger of Allah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to the fourth part in the series of Islamophobia. And it's quite exciting because if you've missed the first three, you're going to have to do some background checking and maybe go on the internet and see if you can find it. But we're looking at myths that people have, and we've been through myth number one, number two, and number three. And we hopefully, inshallah, today we're going to look at myth number four. So we looked at the first one, was the first myth is that Islam is a gigantic block and that it can be immobilized at any time just by a fatwa. And a fatwa, we said, is a command given, handed down by scholars. And we showed you that, no, this cannot just be done by anybody. There's certain rules, there's certain regulations, there's certain procedures that have to be followed. Not just some guy sitting there with a long beard that can just write it out. No, there are certain procedures and regulations that have to be followed. The second one, so we understood that. The second one was that Islam condones violence against non-Muslims. And we saw that it is ridiculous. In fact, we are told to look after non-Muslims, and so we saw that that myth is not fed either. So this myth we got rid of. The third one is that all Muslims are terrorists and we are just waiting for an attack. We just want to attack somebody for no reason or whatever. Even if there's a homeless person who's sitting on the side of the street and he's a Muslim, one day he'll just stand up and he'll attack you for no good reason. The person in your PE class, the person who's studying science with you, the person who is in a retirement village with you, they're just waiting for the opportunity to jump up and attack you. No, this is nonsense. We see that Islam is not a terrorist organization. We looked at fundamentalism, and we said that conservatism and fundamentalism are very similar. But it doesn't mean because you're a conservative, it doesn't mean that because you're a fundamentalist, that it's a negative thing. Some fundamentalism is a good thing. It means that you go back to the fundamentals. It means you go back to what is written in the basics. So you have to understand terminology and be very, very careful of the terminologies that we throw around. And we just write off people because they're fundamentalists. We just write off people because they're conservatives. Conservative Christians have got it right to a certain extent. They want to go back to the text. Just the problem is sometimes they let other things creep in. Just like fundamentalists, they sometimes let the wrong things creep in. And this is not Islamic. This is not the way we live. So we believe that execution is required for a terrorist. Somebody who takes somebody's life and kills somebody, the punishment for a terrorism is execution. Now you might be shocked with that Muslims believe it. Yes, we believe that. You cannot go kill an innocent woman. You cannot kill innocent children. You cannot kill an elderly person. This is forbidden in Islam. And so punishment for terrorism is found in chapter 5 and verse 33. But we can't just go grab a terrorist because he thinks he's a terrorist and just execute him or crucify him or exile him or whatever you want to do to him. There first has to be a court case. And so for Muslims, we believe that there has to be a court case. It has to be done legally. It has to be followed by Sharia law. We can't just go vigilante and have a kangaroo court that we do what we want. We still have to follow laws. And this is what people are quite surprised about Islam. You cannot just marry and divorce. There's a procedure that you must go through. You cannot just execute people or cut somebody's hand off because they're a thief. There's procedures you must go through. There's so much that has to be proved, so much evidence that has to be given. It's almost impossible to prove something like this. So, you see, Islamic terrorism, the very term is an oxymoron. Because Islam means peace, submission to God. So how can you be peaceful and submitting to God and be a terrorist at the same time, terrorizing somebody? They're oxymorons that go against each other. So an Islamic terrorist, when you hear it on the news, it's got nothing to do with Islam. These are people who are trying to fight for a political motive or political cause. Separate politics from religion. However, you can bring politics and religion together, but where religion conflicts with politics, the one must fall away. And normally it must be the politics. So religion and politics work together. Now, for example, if we had to look at terrorism and the phenomenon of terrorism and say that because the person is a Muslim and he's a terrorist, that all Muslims are the same. No. For not one second do I think that Adolf Hitler represents the whole of Christendom. And I don't say, now, all Christians are terrorists, all Christians hate Jews, all Christians want to exterminate people who are gypsies, all Christians want to exterminate people who are Jehovah's Witnesses, all Christians want to exterminate homosexuals, all Christians hate people that are not neo-Nazis. I don't believe that, but Adolf Hitler was a Christian. And so we can't just label all of Christendom in the same way. We have to look at the individual and separate him and say, he might be a Christian, but he's doing it politically. And so we have to do the same thing when it comes to Islam. Look and separate them. The church rejoiced when 9/11 happened because many people said, see, this is what we've been telling you all along. They are terrorists. This is what they stand for. But it's not what we stand for. We are people of peace. We are people who care and compassionate. And 9/11, Muslims died. Not the Muslims that were supposedly in the plane. Muslims that were working in the building. Good, practicing Muslims. Muslims that have carpets to pray on. Muslims that have children. Muslims who are devoutly worshipping Allah. Muslims that pray five times a day, that died in that building. So this is not something that we Muslims agree with. The Christians who say this, the Christians who identify with this, that think that all Muslims are terrorists, please understand that we are not. And if you think we are, do a background check on us. We have no problem. You're welcome to spy on us. You can tap us. You can watch us. You can follow us through the streets. You will see that when we go to the shop to buy food, that's exactly what we do. When we make a phone call, it's to our wife or our children. And our wives and our children, they can laugh. They have fun. Our wives and children, they play. They giggle. They are entertained. Our wives are normal human beings. They are involved in economics. They are involved in the day-to-day lives of society. We are not what you think we are. Find out. Take your time to spy on us, watch us, see us, and you'll see that we are normal human beings. But the only difference is we spend our time thinking about the hereafter more than the here and now. The hereafter is more important to us than the here and now. So I think we've got that underway, under wraps, and let's move on to the next fourth myth that people often think about Muslims, and that is that Islam oppresses women, that we somehow don't give women any rights and they no longer have the same rights as humans. Now in South Africa, in the law books, it was once recorded in our law books that the word of a donkey is to be listened to and accepted over the words of a black man. Now you do not find that anywhere in the Quran. We do not have racism, we do not have prejudice, we do not have sexism. But the government, a human government in South Africa, a prejudiced apartheid government, said that you can listen to the donkey's word over a black man's word. How terrible for someone to write something like that. And we have people that write these terrible things, these sexist things, and these racist things, and these statements. But we have a vision, and we have this picture of Muslims. We think of Muslim women as a harem. We see women, we think of them as captive people. They don't have any rights. They have no way of thinking. They cannot think for themselves. They have no rights to go to education. They cannot be teachers. They cannot be professional workers. But this is wrong because we find that many Muslim women throughout the world are encouraged. You know, the majority of Muslim women are in the universities today. There are more Muslim women in universities than Muslim men. There are more Muslim women who are involved in professional social working work environments, psychologists. They had the peace conference, the Zakia Naik peace conference that was held, the Solution for Humanity. And this conference was held at question and answer time. I sat and listened to the speakers from all the different countries in the world. And during question and answer time, I took notes how many sisters asked questions to how many men asked questions. And I found that the females, the women, were more professionals. They would start by saying, I'm studying psychology. I'm a doctor. I'm a lawyer. I'm a professional. Where the men would say up and they would say, I'm a home executive. I'm looking for a job. I'm presently unemployed. The women were in the workplace. In India, we found more of the women that were asking questions at the conference were professionals. And so the idea that women are oppressed and they don't have equality, this is not true. You see, generally, we believe in equality. We are created from one. We are created from one. In other words, we are not created from two that says a woman has no rights and a man has more rights. We have exactly the same rights. We have the same equality in every way. Women have the privilege and the honor of being able to take care of our children. And they're not obliged to do this. They have the choice to do this, to look after the children. They have the right to be able to earn their own wage. They have the right to all the same laws. A woman can divorce her husband if he likes it or not. If a woman wants to divorce her husband, she can. She can at any time divorce him. It's not only him who can divorce her, she can divorce him. She has the right to inherit. She has the right to get the best education she wants. But there's a difference. There is a vast difference between men and women. But there's no difference at the same time. There's a difference biologically. Biologically, you can see that I am not a woman. I hope you can see I'm not a woman. But you can see on the outside that I'm not a woman. There's a physical difference between a male and a woman, but there's also a psychological and emotional difference between a male and woman. But before I go into that, we're going to take a break, and after the break, when we get back, we're going to have a look at what women's rights are in Islam. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And welcome back. We are looking at the last part in the series. If you've missed the first three episodes, go online, try and find it. Get it, because it's going to help you to understand the misconceptions that people have, the myth of the Islamic threat we are talking about today. And we're getting to our last part. We're almost at the home run. We're going to have a quick refresher. So if you didn't catch this course and you weren't part of it, you'll be able to get a bit of a background of what we've been speaking about. The final part we're looking at is Islam and women. And what we see is that women have exactly the same rights. They have the rights to inherit. They have the right to get an education. They have rights to get jobs. All the same rights. Now I know what you're thinking. You've heard stories about in Saudi Arabia and places like that where women are not allowed to drive in the car by themselves. They have to have a chaperone with them in the car. Somebody has to be with them in the car. This is an Islamic state, and that is the law that the people decided on. It didn't get decided on in one day or one week. It was discussed with the woman. And what they found is many times, this happened many times, and if you don't believe this, go check your statistics in your own country to find out if this is true. Many times women break down on the side of the road, or they have a problem with the car, they stop and they're by themselves. So what they get out of the car, they open the front of the car and they try to figure out what's wrong with it, hit it with the shoe, the engine, nothing works. And somebody will stop and they get attacked. Maybe they get robbed. Maybe something even worse happens. I don't have to go into details about what could be worse than being robbed. But a woman is by herself and this happens. And so what happened is they've decided, on a consensus, it was decided that the best thing to do is for a woman to have a chaperone with her in the car, or someone to drive the car for her. What an honor. I would like someone to drive me around everywhere. I lived in Malawi, and once when I lived in Malawi, I wasn't permitted to drive my own car. There was somebody who drove the car for me, and I tell you what, I felt like a king. So for a woman to have someone drive her around and chaperone her around is an honor for a woman. If I was a woman, I'd be honored that my husband or sent my brother drove me around. I would be quite honored by that. But I can see how the Western world might not understand it that way. They might see it as not having control. Now listen, if you live in America or you live in Britain, you drive by yourself. You can drive your car by yourself if you want to. But as an Islamic country, we look after a woman, we care about a woman, we don't want them to be injured or hurt, so we send a chaperone with them, someone to look after them. This is not a sexist thing, this is not because we belittle them, this is because we value them that much. We don't want to have our woman destroyed, we want their purity destroyed, and so that's why we do it. However, those women who are following the Quran, they will find it very easy to do the things that are pleasing for Allah. Just like men, we'll also find it things that we do that are very pleasing to Allah. Now you notice the way I'm standing here today. This is quite decorative and it's quite fashionable. And this is a style or design that I came up with. There's not a right and wrong way for me to dress. This is a style that I chose. I went into a shop and I said to him, I wanted to look like this, 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 and he designed it the way I wanted it. This is not typical. This is not a typical Islamic dress that you've probably seen people walking down the street in your local town. This is my style, this is my design. But one thing you will notice about it, it is very modest. It's not hugging tight onto my body. It doesn't show every part of my body. It covers all the important parts of my body. It's long sleeve. It's quite a high collar. And so what I'm doing is I'm showing my modesty by the way I dress. I could walk around with a very thin t-shirt on, no shirt at all, but I choose not to because I follow what the Quran says. And when I watch what the Quran says, I want to protect my modesty. I want to protect my modesty because my wife protects hers. I should protect mine for her. So I shouldn't expect one rule for my wife and another rule for me. As a man, I know that I should protect my modesty. So I hope you've understood a little bit about Islam. And I hope you'll be able to see that the myth of the Islamic threat is nothing that you really need to worry about. And so under Islamophobia today, in this course that we've been through in the last four episodes, we've had a look at how Islamophobia, what's the definition of Islamophobia, the negative stereotypes that people have had of Islamophobia. And so as a recap, let's have a look. Islamophobia is not a terrorist organization. It's not a terrorist cell. And don't worry when you see headlines that says, watch out for the enemy within, or Islamic terrorism, or the war is at hand, the jihad is about to take place. These are just things that the media is using to sell newspapers. In South Africa, we have a newspaper. It's called the Sun newspaper, and they put the most outrageous headlines. There were headlines like, the aliens have arrived, or three-headed baby speaks three times, and things like this. They'll do these type of things to sell newspapers. And of course, people pick up the newspaper and they find it's just a normal story. But they put these controversial titles on there so that you are going to buy the paper. Make sure that you don't look at the stereotype Muslim as barbaric and as uncouth and as uneducated and as a rough person who opposes women and oppresses the children and beats their children. We are not like that. Muslims, we care, we are compassionate, we're involved in all forms of society, and especially in the upliftment of society. Like I said in the very first episode, I said that many Muslims, they choose to become doctors and lawyers and nurses and psychiatrists and medical professionals because they want to help society. They don't do it because they're thinking they're going to become rich by it. Today there are so many doctors and so many lawyers and so many, it's not like it was before where there were a few and they made a lot of money. Today people, especially in the Muslim community, they donate a large amount of their time to charity and helping the work of the less fortunate. So the consequences of Islamophobia, they are prejudice, they are defamation and slander, they are discrimination, they are defiling, in other words, you take away people's civil liberties and rights, and they are hate crimes. These are the things that cause Islamophobia. These are the consequences of hate. When you hate somebody, you are causing prejudice, you are slandering them, and so we want you to look at these things and to break away from them. We've seen since September 11th that the number of hate crimes, the number of discriminatory acts, the number of discriminatory complaints that the police have received have gone up from 80 in one country to 525 since September 11th. We've looked at the origins of Islamophobia, that they're deeply rooted from the Crusaders and the Inquisition all the way through to the Renaissance and right up to modern time, right up to the 1960s. So we saw that there were four myths, and these four myths are that Islam is a gigantic block that we all think collectively and have one brain and none of us think for ourselves. And I said that is not true. We think very carefully. We all have our own mentality. We all have our own thinking. We saw that Islam is not a violent religion. We're not violent. We don't condone violence against non-Muslims. We don't look for people in the streets and think, how can I call this person an infidel? How can I go into a war against them because they're not a Muslim? No, we are desperately, desperately wanting to protect you. We desperately want you to come to a saving knowledge of God. We want you to be saved. We want you to come away from the dangers that you're in. When we see you walking towards danger, we try to pull you away. If the window was open behind you, we would grab you and pull you away from falling out of the window. That is our desire. It's definitely not to push you out the window and let you go into danger. As Muslims, we want to protect you. And then the third thing is Muslims, one of the myths that often people are misunderstanding is they think we're all terrorists and that terrorism and Islam are inseparable from each other. They couldn't be further from the truth. I said to you very clearly that Islam and terrorism, you have to look at the difference between what is religion and what is political. And you can see that these two are very, very different from each other. Whenever you see the news and they say Islamic fundamentalists, separate the two, because you see Islamic fundamentalists can be a good thing, but it can be a bad thing where politics is pulled into it and suddenly it becomes a political issue and not a religious issue. And then the fourth thing is that we spoke about is that Islam oppresses women. It does not oppress women. It gives women the same rights. It gives them the rights to study. It gives them the rights to own property. It gives them the right to divorce their husband, choose the husband that they want. And then we looked as well in the series at the six pillars of faith that Muslims have to get an understanding. We believe in God. We believe in the angels. Remember, we said angels, not in the way you see it commercially. We said in the proper way we understand angels. We believe in the messengers, in other words, all the prophets that were sent. We believe in the holy books, the scriptures. We believe in the gospels and the psalms. We believe in the day of judgment, that there's a day coming where everybody is going to stand before Allah and they're going to have to answer for what they've done with their life. And we believe in fate and destiny. In other words, we believe in predestination. And then we said we also believe in the five pillars of our practice. In other words, Muslims, we practice our declaration of faith. And if you want to hear it, you need to listen to it very carefully, because this is probably the most important words you're ever going to hear in your life. If you're not a Muslim, you need to listen carefully, because these are the most important words you're ever going to hear. And they are La ilaha illallah Muhammadur Rasulullah, which simply means translated into English. And you can say it in English if you want to. And the words in English are, I declare that there is no other deity, no other God, no one else worthy of worship other than God, and that the Prophet Muhammad is the final messenger of God. So these are the basic pillars that we believe are our principles. That was the first one. The second one is we believe that we must pray often, and at least five times a day we do this. In fact, most Muslims, we pray hundreds of times, possibly even thousands of times a day. We also believe that we should fast in the lunar month of Ramadan. We don't follow the sun signs, we don't follow the star signs, we don't follow anything to do with the sun. We follow the moon signs, which is what the Jews had done right from the very beginning. what the Christians had done until 300 years after Christ, and we still continue doing that today. So we fast for a whole month, and we do this so that we can purify ourselves, so we can understand what humanity goes through, and so we can care for our brothers and sisters that are out there. We love you, we care about you, that's why we do it. We fast so that we can understand the suffering that maybe you are going through in your life. And then the fourth thing that we do is we pay 2.5% of our income to the poor. Don't give this to the local church, we don't give this to the local mosque, we don't give this to anybody to go buy himself a Mercedes or a BMW or a timeshare or to improve his house. We give this money to those who are in need the most. We give it to the poor, the sick, the needy, those who have nothing. Those are the ones we reach out to. And this is what you do voluntarily. No one else is around to see what you're doing with that money. You give it when you want to give it. And we believe that it's something that you have to do, even though I said it's voluntarily. You do it voluntarily when no one else knows. So you don't do it to brag or to show off. And then the last part is we go on pilgrimage. We believe that once in your lifetime, we believe as Muslims that we must go on pilgrimage to the city of Mecca. And this is something that we believe that must be done by all Muslims in their lifetime, if possible. So basically, I hope that we've been able to dispel some of the myths of Islam, some of the myths that people have said about Islam, that we're not this gigantic religion that's trying to take over the world. And incidentally, if we want to look at percentage of the Arabs in the world, we only make up a very small percentage of Arabs, of Arab Muslims. And we find that, for example, the largest number of Muslims in the world actually are from America. They make up 30%. The African-American Muslim population is 30%. The Central Asian Muslim population is about 33%. The African from Africa only makes up about 3%, so it's quite small. Many people say the whole of Africa is under Muslim control. This is not true. Only 3% of Africa is under Muslims. And so we find that even amongst the European is about 2%. So between Africa and European, there's only about a percentage difference. So you see, Muslims are made up of people from all over the world, all over the continent, all over from all different nationalities. We are people who follow the Quran, and we are not ashamed of following the Quran. We are proud of it. And if you see us in a shopping center reading a Quran, if you see us on the bus reading a Quran, or on the tube, or on the train, or in a taxi, don't be scared of us. We're not looking for recipes on how to make bombs. When we're reading the Quran, we're reading how we can become stronger Muslims, how we can serve humanity more, how we can find verses that will teach us to be better people, how we can become humble people. You see, Muslims, we are humble people. We are humble. We are looking down out of respect for you. Well, it's not we're afraid of you. It's not because we don't like you. It's because we respect you. And so we put our heads down out of respect. When a woman, if you see a Muslim man in the streets and you see us and we lower our heads, it's not because we think you're ugly or because we think you're horrible or because we don't want to speak to you. It's because we respect you. If you are somebody else's wife and you belong to somebody else and you own somebody else, he belongs to you and you belong to her. So we respect you, and this is why we do it. So we as Muslims, we love the Quran, we love praying, we love worshiping, and we love you, and we want you to become a Muslim. And so if you learn anything from this and you're not a Muslim, seek out the truth. The truth will set you free. It's only by searching for the truth that the truth will set you free. Thank you for watching this episode and watching the series with me. And I'm Arib Islam. I look forward to seeing you again, inshallah. Assalamu alaikum.